Hello, hello, hello. My name is Jill Cody, and welcome to Be Bold America. Be Bold America is a live bi-weekly talk show for those who are motivated to step out with the bold actions necessary to begin reuniting this country, save our democracy, and who want to delve deeply into the challenges ahead to do so. Today, one painful truth is that the white nationalism is being emboldened. It is holding power at the highest levels of our federal government. And last weekend, it raised its hateful head at the Gilroy Garlic Festival when it was discovered that the festival's murderer promoted white supremacist pro-Nazi material. Then yesterday, another white supremacist killed 20 people and injured 26 in El Paso, Texas. Astonishingly today, 9 people were killed and 27 injured in Dayton, Ohio. How can we have a chance to reunite this country when white supremacy is flourishing in America? We have big things to do. Today's topic is Black Americans and the Painful Truth. We will be speaking with Dr. Wilmer Leon and Akin Babatola to discuss this astonishingly sad and shocking issue. Dr. Wilmer is a political scientist whose expertise is in the areas of Black politics, American government, and public policy. He is a nationally broadcast Sirius XM radio talk show host of Inside the Issues with Wilmer Leon on the Urban View channel. He is a regular contributor to truthout.org, theroot.com, politicsandcolor.com, blackstarnews.com, Black Agenda Report, and over 200 newspapers and other websites across the country. His latest book is Politics, Another Perspective, Commentary and Analysis on Race, War, Ethics, and the American Political Landscape. Dr. Leon, welcome to Be Bold America. It is an honor to speak with you.
Well, Jill, thank you so much for the opportunity, and I'm humbled for the invitation and greatly appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. It's our pleasure. And in the studio with me is Akin Babatola. Akin is a molecular biologist and is, since 2002, the laboratory and environmental compliance manager for the City of Santa Cruz. He is a lifetime member in the NAACP and is a member of the 100 Black Men Silicon Valley chapter. He has frequently published in professional environmental water quality science publications. Akin has a commitment to dialectic thinking to his worldview, which he hopes is transparent in his science and politics and consistently in his social and professional affiliations. Akin is a proud father of a precocious teenager, Gracie, who is a junior at Santa Cruz High School, and a proud grandpa of a 3-year-old, handsome, young white boy named Nathan. Welcome to the program, Akin. Thank you for joining me in the studio.
Thank you, Jill.
Wilmer, I'll begin with you first. As you know, we have a beloved event in Gilroy. It was in its 40th year that was infiltrated last weekend by a white supremacist who killed 3 people and injured many more. One of those killed was recently graduated Black college student, originally from New York, but who moved to Santa Cruz. Then yesterday, another white supremacist killed 20 people and injured many more while they were shopping for school supplies. Then, today was another mass murder in Ohio. Dr. Leon, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you and Akin is, even though I'm a white middle-class woman, I feel kicked in the stomach with every senseless murder of a Black person by a police officer, these white domestic terrorist acts such as the ones recently in Gilroy and El Paso, or when the man in the Oval says there are good people on both sides and tweets racist tweets every day. Lately, towards Baltimore and 4 duly elected Congress members, it just sickens me. I know it's a big question, but to fight this evil genie, we must ask, how can we have a chance to reunite this country when a painful truth is white supremacy is flourishing in America? How can we do that, Dr. Leon?
Well, a couple of things. And also, let me say good evening to Akin as well.
Thank you.
My pleasure. The first thing is, as I've been listening to some of the news programs from this morning, and even as far back as last week, when the president tweeted out his more recent racist foolishness. People keep asking the question, how did we get here? And to me, that question only ignores the fact that this is where America has always been. Mm-hmm. We're coming up on, within the next couple of weeks, the 400th anniversary or commemoration of the 20, as they were described, 20 and some odd enslaved Africans arriving at Port Comfort, Virginia. Mm-hmm. So this is, as H. Rapp Brown said, this is a racism is as American as apple pie. What I also think we have to come to understand is and ask ourselves, why are young white males, the gentleman in Gilroy was 19 years old. I think the guy in Dayton was in his early 20s. What is the basis of their frustration? Well, they've been sold this idea of an American dream. And with that and the white supremacist mentality that goes around it, there's a sense of entitlement that because they are white, they are entitled to a particular standard of living, particular accommodations, particular passes, so to speak. And what they're finding out is that because of deindustrialization in America, their so-called promise is no longer being kept. And Donald Trump promising to them that he would bring these jobs back to America, and he has failed in that promise. So what Trump has been very successful at doing is convincing them that it's not General Electric, it's not Ford Motor Company, it's not Maytag, it's Mexicans, it's Guatemalans, it's Hondurans that are causing their problems. So they turn to what then Senator Obama told us about in, 2010, I think it was. It's xenophobia. They turn to their guns. They turn to their religion. And final point. This is a multivariate equation. There are a number of factors that contribute to this. We have to ask ourselves, why are white males killing themselves at higher rates than ever before in this country? The rate of white male suicide in this country is up, as well as white male mass shooting. So to me, those are two data points that indicate an incredible level of frustration, an incredible level of psychosis, and I think it all stems down to racism, white supremacy, as Dr. Francis Press Welsing would say, and the fact that their frustrations are being misdirected to people of color.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Akeem.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Leon, for that background on it. It seems to me that, as you rightly pointed out, we're about the 400th year of captured Africans being brought to America for enslavement. And it seems like it's important to understand that the foundations of what you see as this resurgence of white nationalism is rooted in the economic forces that started America, that you're not going to be able to analyze and corral or even educate those who now feel that their sense of entitlement is being, they're being deprived because there's competition. They always had a system where they concentrated power, a group concentrated power, and exploited all others to their own benefit. That America is now seemingly reflecting those atavistic tendencies, those tendencies that we thought we had abandoned, is simply a reflection of the economic collapse that happened late 80s, and Obama came in and put a salve on it, and not only were they unwilling to recognize what he did or to credit him because he was black, they want to pretend that in fact he was part of the cause. part of the reaction that brought the president, the current president, to power, you may have heard in the last debate, one of the eloquent candidates said he couldn't. Somebody of that caliber, that character, that track record, shouldn't have been within a cheater's chance of the White House. There's no doubt that the fact that they don't think deeply as to the root causes of things allows people to be coerced into things that they would, when they think deeply, reject. That's what white nationalism is.
Dr. Leon?
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly. What we are seeing now manifesting itself as Donald Trump articulates his hyperbolic racist rhetoric, we can go back to the response to the election of President Obama. We can go back to Tom Tancredo and the Tea Party, and we want our country back. Who had Tom Tancredo's country? I know I didn't have it. I know if I did have it, I damn sure wouldn't go give it back to him. But I never had Tom Tancredo's country. Go back to the visuals of all of those armed white folks standing on the mall in Washington, D.C., or those people that were cussing at Congressman John Lewis, calling him the N-word, as John Lewis and Barney Frank, and I think it was Mel Watt, were walking across the congressional, the Capitol grounds, and calling Mel Watt and John Lewis the N-word and Barney Frank a faggot. All of that anger, all of that vitriol, all of that hatred presenting itself. Why? Because Barack Obama, we finally had an African American as president. So I agree with Akeem 1,000%. Again, this is a multivariate equation. There are a number of factors that contribute to what we have seen on display as recently as El Paso, Gilroy, California, and Dayton, Ohio. But again, at the end of the day, this frustration is not an accident. That the guy Bet in Dayton was 24 years old. These young white men, and I have worked on, and I think I'm coining a phrase, neoliberal racism. And what I mean by neoliberal racism is the rhetoric of Donald Trump has basically contracted out to the private sector the responses that we saw in Gilroy, the responses that we saw in Dayton, the responses that we saw in Pittsburgh at the synagogue, in California at the synagogue. Donald Trump's vitriol using that bully pulpit is outsourcing to the private sector the militaristic responses that we are seeing from these sick individuals.
You're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM, many voices, one station, and listen worldwide online on ksqd.org. We're speaking with Dr. William Leon, SiriusXM host of Inside the Issues with William Leon, that airs Saturday mornings, and Akeem Babatola, a microbiologist, laboratory and environmental compliance manager for the city of San Jose, and community activist. I'm your host, Jill Cody. Tune in to KSQD Monday evening at 6 for Climate One, produced by the Commonwealth Club. Climate One is a forum for candid discussion among climate scientists, policymakers, activists, and concerned citizens, with a focus on energy, the economy, and the environment. Climate One airs Monday evening at 6 p.m., right after Talk of the Bay, here on KSQD 90.7 FM and KSQD.org. Back to our guests, Dr. Leon. I think one thing that I would like to talk a little bit more about is white privilege and what is white entitlement. I know it's something that Black Americans have lived, a painful truth that they've lived with. But from speaking for myself, I wasn't conscious of my entitlement or privilege and probably till I got into college. I know I grew up in a community that offered me more advantages, and because I was white. And I also know now that it made it a lot easier for me to get employment. And I think that it's important for waking up maybe other people of Caucasian that understand that there's racism going on, but not maybe understand what they've been given just based on the color of their skin.
Well, there are so many elements and aspects to answer that question. We can go back to here's a very simple example. Georgetown University, back in the 1800s, was on the verge of bankruptcy, and in order to save the university, they sold, I think, 20 or 17 enslaved Africans that they themselves owned. And from the sale of those enslaved Africans, they now, Georgetown University, has a, it's now, I think, $1.5 billion is the endowment of Georgetown University. So I just use that as a very simple example. Whether it's being pulled over by the police, whether it's being able to rent an apartment or not being allowed to rent an apartment because the name on the application is Laquita Jackson, and they know that there aren't a whole lot of white women named Laquita Jackson. Whether it's a matter of when you're shopping in a store and being told, as has happened to me, don't touch the merchandise. When I'm trying to buy a suit and I want to feel the texture of the wool in the suit, and I'm told by the salesperson, please, don't touch the merchandise. It is so pervasive within the culture of America that there aren't enough mechanisms and explanations that would enable me to convey to your audience that, again, as H. Rapp Brown said, racism is as American as cherry pie. It is who America is, and whether you're talking about bombing people in Yemen, whether it is ignoring the plight of the Palestinians in Palestine, whether it was Ronald Reagan supporting South Africa, I mean, pick it. I don't know what to say.
Well, you're very good.
Maybe Hakeem can do it better than me.
Well,
I don't know what to say.
Well, let me just attempt to broaden the field where, so that people don't think that saying racism is as American as apple pie is a peculiar problem of the United States of America. It is actually a problem that existed throughout the Americas. I mean, that's where you had the Bolivian Revolution, that's where you had the Sandinistas, that's why you had the Cuban Revolution and all that. It's all rooted in economic challenges. People, groups, often want to advance, not having a consciousness that all humans are equal and all humans want to advance the same way, to make the cause of their society, of their children, better than what they met. That ignorance is what's fueling what you just described. Racism and slavery were not peculiar and are not peculiar to the United States of America. But we have a particular challenge that never in the history of America, certainly not in the modern history of America, has it been led by someone who has racism ingrained in him, whose core impulses are predatory. Therefore, racism lends itself to him to advance his cause. And when he makes his political calculations, as people are beginning to realize, he has already calculated that most moral people will not be voting for him. He intends to divide us on the basis of ignorance, which lends itself to a level of immorality, and raw racism, which I don't think it's that high, but he will combine those. Hopefully, the progressive forces, whether they're simply liberal or deeply progressive, recognize this and rescue the country back. That's the challenge we all face.
Well, one thing that I wanted to bring...
Jill,
yes, Dr. Leon.
If I could just quickly...
Sure.
On 2 points that Akeem just made. One is, he talked about all humans. One of the things that I have been writing about and been speaking to is that Africans in America, and now African-Americans, have not been struggling for civil rights. We have not been struggling for human rights. We have simply been struggling to be recognized as human beings. And as evidence of that point, I go back to the Virginia Slave Code of the late 1600s, where the question was asked in Virginia, in the colony of Virginia, could a master be accused of murder for killing a slave? And the answer was no. Because no one in their right mind would damage their own property. And that is where I found the first time codified in American law that we as human beings were referred to as property. And the other point about political calculation, I don't know if you saw it, Jill, I sent you an op-ed
yes.
that I just published, where I said Donald Trump is ignorant, but he's not stupid. And to Hakeem's point, we keep asking ourselves and taking up all of this time on news programs, asking ourselves, is Donald Trump a racist? Well, you might as well be asking, is water wet? And if so, why? Because he tells us and shows us that every day. But one thing he is not, for as ignorant of a man as he is, he's not stupid. And we make the mistake of playing him as stupid. And we're going to follow him down that rat hole to our own peril, just as Hillary Clinton.
I agree with you. I don't think he's either stupid or even remotely ignorant. As I said before, his instincts...
Oh, he's ignorant. No.
I'm going to try within a brief few seconds to disabuse you of that notion. I think he's calculating. I mean, you can't be both ignorant and calculating at the same time. The man bankrupted, what, six different corporations? To get himself wealthy, those are not the acts of an ignorant person. They're the acts of a super predator. That's what he is. And that he has, in fact, now encouraged what seems to be the resurgence of white nationalism is simply part of his calculus. He is not ignorant. He may be stupid from a point of view.
He's ignorant of the Constitution. He doesn't understand the Constitution.
That is true.
He's ignorant in terms of the functioning of American government. He doesn't know how American government functions. He's ignorant in certain aspects of culture.
Right.
That's what I meant.
Yes. And I agree with you that... He may be willingly ignorant of those things because he's been able to exploit that in his so-called business life. He's understood that threats, the potential to blackmail others, have always opened doors for him, which normal American citizens don't even challenge. To that degree, he's blinded himself to the provisions, the nuances, the clear edicts of the Constitution. I don't think that's being ignorant. I think that's being really exploitative and predatory. I think that's what he is.
What I wanted to also discuss is that I think the man in the Oval Office is even worse than we think he is. if it's possible. People talk about him as a narcissist, and yes, that's true, you know, believing that you're better than others and arrogant. It's like when he said, only I can fix it. Or exaggerating their achievements and boastful, like I'm a very stable person. And people talk about him being narcissistic. And then also I've heard people talk about him being a psychopath. And that's true. There's no empathy there, compassion or humility. However, in my research, there's a psychologist's name for a personality type called the dark triad. And a dark triad is a in one person is a narcissist, psychopath, and Machiavellian. And it's the Machiavellian part that allows him to keep children in cages, you know, the hurt that he wants to do. I love Stephen Colbert's quote. He said, let me see if I can find it here. There it is. He said, Trump is like a creature of pure energy, and our horror only makes him stronger. So we're dealing with, a dark triad person who wants to hurt. That's what Akeem's talking about that predator who sees no one else of value in the world other than himself and is a psychopath, so has no sense of emotion, mimics emotion, like when he said today about there's no room for hate in this country. Well, he knows he's supposed to say that, but he doesn't feel that. And then you add the racism and white supremacy on top of that. So I think grappling with the perfect storm of this man, also believing in deconstructing our government from inside. Wilmer, thoughts on the dark triad personality? Have you heard of that?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I've interviewed on my program and had some extensive conversations with the Yale psychiatrist, Dr. Bandy Lee. And I don't know if you all are familiar with her work, but Dr. Lee, who one of her primary area of expertise is violence, is psychosis and violence. And she is very, very concerned. And has lectured Congress to this effect of the threats and the concerns that the current president's behavior exudes or demonstrates. I think you're spot on with that analysis. He is all of the things that you mentioned, and unfortunately, I don't think that he is I don't think that he's there as a result of a mistake. And that is, and I'm, Greg Palast's work, which demonstrates that he didn't even win, that Trump didn't even win the Electoral College, will set the validity of, and Greg's work is nothing but valid. Let's set Greg's work aside just for the sake of this conversation. I don't think that Donald Trump is an anomaly in terms of the mindset of those who are not only in charge of the elite that are in charge of running this country, but the elite, the global elite, that are that have such control over the international interactions in this country, they just don't like the crude mannerisms in which he displays his behavior.
Well, and then you overlay the Republican Party, and we've got a Cat 5 hurricane going on instead of a perfect storm.
Exactly.
You're listening to Be Bold America. Go ahead.
Let me just quickly give you one example. And Akeem mentioned this when he talked about Venezuela. A lot of people look at the Trump administration's attack on Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela, and they attribute that to the Trump administration. But the anti-Venezuelan policy and the attack on Venezuela didn't start with Donald Trump. It came from Barack Obama. And before Barack Obama, it came from George Bush. So that's American foreign policy at play, based upon the Monroe Doctrine, we just, many of us lose sight of the history because we're so caught up in the moment. So in Yemen is another example. We look at the greatest man-made humanitarian crisis in the world, according to the UN rapporteur, as it relates to Yemen, but that Yemen policy didn't come from Donald Trump. That Yemen policy came from Barack Obama. That's American foreign policy at play.
You're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM, your ink spot on the dial. I'm your host, Jill Cody, and I have the honor to be speaking with Dr. Wilmer Leon, political scientist, and Akin Babatola, a microbiologist and community activist. KSQD thanks the following recurring donors who support our wonderful programs by providing monthly contributions. You inspire us to give you our very best at 90.7 FM. May you also inspire others to donate on our website. Thank you very much to Susan Martinez and Maria Mead and Robert Staten. You do inspire us to give our best at this station, so may you always inspire others, and please go to our website and donate whatever you can. Thank you. Now, back to our guest, Dr. Wilmer Leon, SiriusXM host of Inside the Issues with Wilmer Leon, that airs Saturday mornings on the Urban View Channel, and Akin Babatola, a microbiologist, environmental compliance manager for the city of Santa Cruz, and a community activist. Akin?
Yes, thank you. And Dr. Leon had mentioned, and I just want to digress briefly about the Venezuelan circumstance. I recently spent a couple of weeks in Trinidad and Tobago, and as you know, that's the nearest country to Venezuela. And when I had asked my driver from the airport to my hotel if they were seeing an influx of Venezuelans, he said yes. And I said, why didn't the citizens go after the aid that Sir Branson and others were trying to get in and Maduro didn't allow? He said, very simply, for them, they'd rather die with their dignity than go back to being dominated by Europeans. They don't see the 37-year-old stooge that America is trying to foist on them as their own choice. They know they're poor. They know they're hungry, but they won't oppose Maduro because they have a vivid recollection of what racism is, what, in fact, we're talking about, white supremacy. It exists over there, too. So our job, I think, in this country, those who are progressive as well as those who are liberal, is to make sure that we don't alienate those who may not yet be conscious of the underpinnings, and you've both discussed the triad that Donald Trump represents. I think Marianne Williamson, one of the candidates, also talked about, in her own terms, in her own language, the dark underside. And all of that thrives in ignorance. And our job, as long as we're conscious, our job is to waken other people, to make the force of knowledge of reality so huge that this anomaly is just that, an abbreviated anomaly that does not deserve anything but a blip in the history of America. That's our challenge. That's why I walk away from engaging him in terms of, oh, he's ignorant, or he's whatever else, because there are those who, perhaps because of religious coaching and all that, react to that. I'd rather have their minds focus on the realities of the moment. Let them understand the arc of American history that's bending to its progress. Let's recruit them. And if we have to be silent about Trump for a second, let's do that. Because what's more important is that he is nothing but a very brief pause in the progressive arc of this country.
Dr. Leon.
Oh, I don't debate that in the least. My referencing him as ignorant is a response to all of the, what I believe is distracted dialogue about him being a racist. And which is why I say he's ignorant, but he's not stupid. And so don't play him cheap. That's the whole reason why I go through that process is, and I think Hakeem and I are saying the same thing. Don't play him cheap. You play him cheap at your own peril. And so I don't say he's ignorant to call him names. I say he's ignorant because I think that's a reflection of reality. But again, I say he's not stupid. And understand the political calculation that he's going through and that what he's doing is a political calculation. And it's a political calculation to come to a determined outcome. And if you're not careful, you'll become a victim, just as we became victims in 2016.
Now, to overlay something else on top of this, my guest last time...
That's not enough.
I think we're going to have many more conversations. My last guest was Dr. Ruth Ben-Gayat. And we were talking about authoritarianism and fascism. And when we look at the defining characteristics of fascism, one of which is identification of enemies as a unifying class. So they rally and unify patriotic frenzy around the need to eliminate a perceived common enemy. And it's racial or ethnic groups or liberals or socialists or the people at the border. Mm-hmm. So there's this whole fascistic authoritarian predator in him as well. And, you know, the disregard of human rights that we're also seeing, you know, he doesn't see those at the border and many others, other probably himself, as human. And the power of the powerful and continuing nationalism, the hugging of the flag, the MAGA hat, you know, these are the fascist supremacy of military. It's the first time we had tanks on our streets in Washington, D.C. at a July 4th, and that July 4th was just really all about him.
Certainly.
Again, sexism, we know how he treats women, the control of the mass media, talking about journalists and that as an enemy of the people. I could go on. There are, the 14 characteristics of fascism. And what Dr. Ben-Gayat, I apologize, Dr. Ben-Gayat, I get her name, is that if he's reelected, she sees him then moving into actually putting journalists in jail, actually implementing some of the fascist characteristics. So I'm overlaying the dark triad personality and the racism with also his fascistic and authoritarian personality as well. Dr. Leon?
I think you're spot on there. When you mentioned his attacking journalists, there's already legislation before Congress that can make it even more perilous for journalists to, they're cloaking this, I think, under the guise of a CIA agents and identifying spies. But all of this really has to do with clamping down on journalists, moving the United States to a more fascist regime. Because I think that one of the things that we can even go back to the framers of the Constitution and understanding that one of their great concerns as they were laying out the framework for the country was the uprising of citizens if there became too great of a disparity between the haves and the have-nots. Mm-hmm. And they were very, very conscious of what would happen in this country if the have-nots looked at the haves and said, enough of this. They basically were trying to avoid another American Revolution as they attacked Britain. So what I think we're seeing now is the government laying the foundation to ensure that they will be able to protect themselves if this disparity that we are experiencing right now becomes even greater, and the working class, the poor and the working class and the middle class, the shrinking middle class in this country, decide to turn on the government. And you can define turn on the government however you choose to. Final point about those at the border. One of the interesting things that I find about this whole discussion about migration into this country, whether it's from Mexico, El Salvador, Honduras, rarely do you hear anybody talk about the American foreign policy that has been responsible for decimating the economies in those countries and forcing those people to come to this country. You take American foreign policy and overlay on top of that the problems of global warming and how, for example, global warming is impacting Honduras and its coffee farmers and their inability to raise coffee beans, and they're coming to this country seeking work. Very rarely in all of that discussion about immigration policy do you hear the actual cause of why so many of those people are trying to come to this country.
One thing to add, too, about the fascism is that just, you know, Dr. Ben Guyatt's worry if this person is elected again, not just putting journalists in jail, but Dr. William Barber was at the border just this past week protesting, and his attorneys told him that the Trump administration right now is looking at how to make protesting at the detention centers a felony with a 6-year prison mm-hmm. sentence. And, you know, that is something, if he's reelected, that he would start doing, is that protesting, as in many countries in a dictatorship, China, Russia, mm-hmm. You're not allowed to protest, and that is a foundational pillar of democracy.
Certainly.
So, it's just so, we cannot win. I don't believe a Democrat can win this election without the vital segment of our population, the Black Americans, being not just outraged, but constructively outraged and going to the ballot box, because this man has to be voted out of office. Akeem?
Yes, and I agree with you totally. And I think the Black community is aware of that. I think we use a term woke. We are woke to that fact. But we also know that we need allies. We need, as American as alliance and bridge building is, that's how strong the force that must end this phase, this neo-fascist trend in America has to be. It's not a simple question of the woken Black community. It should be the woken American community. All of us have to be certain that this episode is a blip, is a short nightmare in the long history of this country.
Well, that's why I think it's important for white Americans to understand what white entitlement is and white privilege. That's part of the awakening, so that we can partner. We realize the importance of working together. Dr. Leon.
Well, alliances are key, but it's important to understand that you can't coalesce around weakness. Because when you coalesce around weakness, you basically capitulate. And so what is missing from, I believe, the African-American community is a clear understanding of agenda and a clear understanding of where our power base actually lies. And so we need to spend a lot more time and put in a lot more thought in the being sure that we understand what our issues are, that we understand what our agenda is, so that we then can clearly identify who our allies truly are, and we come to the table from a position of strength instead of, as we all too often have come to the table, from a position of weakness.
You're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM. Many voices, one station. Listen worldwide online at ksqd.org. We're speaking with Dr. Wilmer Leon, SiriusXM host and author of Politics, Another Perspective, Commentary and Analysis on Race, War, Ethics, and the American Political Landscape, and Joaquin Babatola, a microbiologist, laboratory and environmental compliance manager for the City of Santa Cruz, and community activist. I'm your host, Jill Cody. Now, in these few minutes, I want to turn the conversation towards what listeners can keep doing, stop doing, and start doing to help this process along. However, I still have one more question, Dr. Leon, and that is, do you think the Democratic Party has the strength and wherewithal to understand how maybe, how do I say this, we have lost votes through the interstate cross-check program. We have lost votes through, closing, requiring a DMV identification to go vote, and then close all the DMVs in the black neighborhood. I don't know what's ahead, but they are certainly probably looking at how to suppress the votes. And I'm not personally confident the Democratic Party is aware of what new trick might be coming up in the 2020 election, keeping the Russian just out of the conversation, but what's happening internally in our country. Any thoughts on that, Dr. Leon, before we go to keep, stop, start?
Well, I'm glad you said that keeping the Russian conversation out of it, because that is nothing but a distraction and has nothing to do with the outcome of our election. What I think is playing out right before our very eyes, again, as we look at the so-called squad versus Democratic established power in Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and the likes of them, and many members of the Congressional Black Caucus, is the very problem that you've articulated. Nancy Pelosi knows what's going on with the elections. Why haven't we heard her talk about cross-check? Because they are part and parcel of the same problem that we see manifesting itself through the Republican Party. And so I think that they've got some incredible soul-searching to do. Democratic established power has found or believes that their power base is the same power base that the Republicans are trying to appeal to, white male voters. And they are afraid in too many instances to see themselves or to be identified as the party of black people or the party of minorities, because they are being paid by the same contributors from the industrial side of this country, and they are appealing to the same electorate.
You know, what I find fascinating is the white male voters feel victimized, and yet they're the majority, and they're obviously have more power. And then the women, being victimized with the loss of, the fight to take our supremacy away from our own bodies, and the race, those of color, people of color and different nationalities being actually victimized. We all feel like a victim, and I have no answer for that. I just wanted to make an observation. So I refuse to be a victim or an enemy of anyone, and I'd like to have the rest of the country start thinking about being a victim isn't such a great place to be. Akeem?
I imagine, as a member of a minority group that's always being victims, that it's not a comfortable place for a white person to feel that they're in. But I think also that galvanizes us to action. because we're both conscious and we're both living and we're sentient beings, and we know what an insult is, and we know what institutional racism does. And you know, we talked about marginalizing others that don't look like white men. And when there's an opening, a slight lacuna that allows others to compete, the community benefits, the white man benefits, because he gains perspective, additional perspective to enrich his own life. And we can't lose sight of that. We need to keep encouraging them to open those doors and open their minds, because it's on that the progress of everybody lies. And I think, in terms of the Democratic Party, because you asked the question, are they conscious enough? Are they aware? Is it because they're drawing from the same pool of resources and all that? I'm not certain that it's that simple. I think the issue is that there are individual agendas playing out in all political parties. At this stage in our country's political life, it's unfortunate that there are so many forces within the Democratic Party who want to identify themselves as a leader rather than recognizing the crisis of the moment, coalescing and making that. Dr. Leon talked about an agenda. It ought to be that the primary agenda of the moment is to rescue the American dream, is to find leaders who are able to sacrifice personal, temporal agendas to coalesce all of us behind 2-3 strong people who would articulate for the vast majority of us what needs to be done. The first order is to eliminate the miscreant in the White House and to return America to the foundational, the seminal promises of the founding fathers, to continue the progress towards building a more perfect union. That can be done, but without getting rid of the man in the White House, without rescuing the Senate, it's going to be a major uphill battle, and it'll last a long, long time.
Our future depends on it. And rescuing the climate, our climate crisis at the same time. Talk about another overlay. So, Dr. Leon, what can listeners in this discussion, pertaining to this discussion, keep doing, stop doing, start doing to help all of us?
Read. What, and you know, pick. And so people say, well, read what? Well, pick two issues that are relevant and important to you in your life, and read and study so that you can understand when you hear analysis or so-called analysis and individuals talking about that issue or those issues, you will have the command of the subject matter that is to the level that you'll actually be able to engage in critical analysis of what it is that you're hearing. So that when you go to the polls, not only will you know who to vote for, you will honestly understand why you're voting for.
Akeem?
Yes, I totally agree with the doctor. I think being informed is critical. And I think reading may be a lost art, but there are other media through which they can all get informed. But community radios, just like the one we're on now, serve an important link into that education of the community. I think you've both, I think I remember reading somewhere about the collapse of the multi-faceted communications industry, where it's now being collapsed into 4 conglomerates. And it's clear that one of them had an agenda, the agenda of its Australian founder, that has, of course, now poisoned the American political, the body politics with its falseness and with the veneer that it gives to raw racism and all that. It's that we must support organs like this that are not beholden to specific agendas other than to broaden the education of the community. It's important. Reading is important. The media you subscribe to is absolutely important, and it's important to support this kind of media.
What can listeners stop doing? Dr. Wilmer?
They can stop speaking to others out of ignorance because they're not reading. And, for example, you mentioned the Russian hacking issue, and when I asked some people a very simple question, where is the evidence that the Russians hacked into our system? All I get are blanks and blank stares. And then they tell me, yeah, but, Rachel Maddow told us that, hey, well, where is the evidence? And they can't respond. So what people have to stop doing is this knee-jerk reactive response that's not based on any data, that's not based on any references, and just stop parroting what you hear on CNN and MSNBC.
Akeem.
Yes, I was going to say, you're right that not a whole lot of people have read it. But there's no doubt that the Russians interfered. I mean, I think it's very well documented and referenced, particularly if you read...
No, it's not.
I've read the volumes from Mueller's report. He references the synchrony between the communications of the Republican Party and the releases by WikiLeaks is nothing but coordinated. There's no doubt that that's well referenced, but that may be another show.
Let me quickly say that I've talked to Bill Binney, the former director of IT for the NSA, who was responsible for designing the Blue Marble program, which was the program that the NSA created to have this very incident occur, where they could blame a foreign entity for hacking into our election. Bill Binney also looked at the volume of data that allegedly was hacked by the Russians over the internet. He tested it from seven different countries, from seven different servers, and proved empirically that it is physically impossible to transmit the amount of data that they say was hacked over the amount of time in which it was hacked through the internet. It wasn't hacked. It was downloaded to a thumb drive directly from the server. It was not hacked. In fact, Congressman, I think it's Jim Jeffords, asked Mueller the question, why is it that so many of the people that you reference in your report really seem to be Western intelligence people, not Russian intelligence people? Not many people followed up on that line of questioning. The hacking story is a lie. Even Barack Obama said that the intelligence report was inconclusive. And everybody has run with that report as though it's fact. It is not. Where is the evidence?
I wish I had more time to follow up on that, but we're getting close to the end, and I did want to ask what people should start doing. In about 30 seconds, Dr. Leon, do you have what people should start doing?
Read.
Just read, educate yourself.
Read.
Akeem?
Read.
Yes, educate yourself through whatever mechanisms, reading, meeting, being active. And please play a role in your own local community radio.
Thank you to Dr. William Leon and to Akeem Babatola, microbiologist, and Dr. Leon's a political scientist with SiriusXM Radio. Thank you to you for joining us, and I hope you'll tune in next time on Be Bold America. Our next show, Shift Happens in America's Uprising, we'll be talking with Steve Behrman, who is an author, humorist, and political and cultural commentator. He's performed enlightened comedy for his alter ego, Swami Beyondananda. He is host of our podcast. Thank you for joining me, and join on August 18th at 5 p.m. I want to thank Emily Dunham, Be Bold America's program assistant, for her technical support, and a big thank you to our guests. You're listening to KSQD Santa Cruz at 90.7 FM, Many Voices, One Station, and listen worldwide online at ksqd.org. Stay tuned for State of Mind with Deborah Schloss. My name is Jill Cody. Keep, stop, start.
The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily represent those of Natural Bridges Media or KSQD's staff, volunteers, or underwriters.